I am Plante on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Giovanni C. joins me now, the artistic director of the Gateway Theatre Company, is playing the part of Potter in their upcoming production of It's a Wonderful Life. That begins the 6th of December and runs until the 31st. It's a holiday favorite, directed by Peter Jorgensen, and stars Nick Fontaine as George Bailey. Mr. C. is set to depart as artistic director of the Gateway Theatre, a position he assumed in May 2012. I'll get him to reflect on his time at the Gateway, as well as his work as a performer and playwright. His Twitter handle is at Giovanni C. Visit gatewaytheatre.com for tickets and information. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Giovanni C. Mr. C, good morning.
Oh, please, Giovanni. Hi, good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. This is your I guess, from what I read, your last acting role while artistic director of Gateway. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's right. I'm leaving in February. So, this will be the last time as artistic director that I'm acting at Gateway.
Yeah, and so you've been artistic director since, I guess, 2012. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. You've been able to act, direct, and you were a playwright at one point as well during run at the Gateway, right?
That's correct.
Well, what's that like? I mean, not only to be artistic director of an organization, but to be able to, say, do these other roles at the same time?
Well, yeah, I think I would say most artistic directors of companies definitely will direct for their companies. But, you know, but I also happen to have these other arrows in my quiver as a playwright and an actor. So it's been a real joy to be able to, I guess, use a full range of my expressive abilities in my capacity as artistic director.
Yeah, you must have found it hectic, though, with all the, you know, the day job, if you will, of running the place.
Part of the day job, though, is still being a vital artist. So it really sustains me to be able to work on writing a play like Nine Dragons while doing this, or to direct a show like a yoga play that's coming up. No, these are the things that really fuel me. Otherwise, I think artistic directors who forget the art part of the artistic direction, they probably don't do as well over the long haul.
And I guess that's what artists in this part of the world certainly have had to do, is to be nimble, mm-hmm. and to do different things, not only for, say, creativity, but also for, say, to make a living as well, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure, for sure.
Yeah, but is that a discussion that you have with say, people in the community, and not just actors, but say, people behind the scenes as well? That because we're all talking about how difficult and expensive it is to live in this part of the world, that it is hard for some folks in, say, the creative business, if you will, in the arts, to stay here.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a discussion I think that is starting to become more and more pressing, to talk about the affordability of housing, and to talk about how the cost of living in the Lower Mainland is so high that people, it's not just having a side job to sustain their creative endeavors, but having to have two or three jobs going on at the same time because it's just so ridiculously expensive to live here. So, you know, what can we as a community do? We're starting to wrap our heads around things about trying to create more artist live workspace, for mm-hmm. example. That's a really great option to create cultural districts where there can be space available to artists. But it's a discussion we're really going to have. Otherwise, people will start, continue this exodus to other more affordable cities.
And there has been an exodus, but it remains such a vital and vibrant community, regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, there's so many talented people here and so many opportunities. It's that difficult decision you have to make of, can I make a go out in a less expensive city? So.
Yeah, so a lot of us are familiar with It's a Wonderful Life because we watch the movie every year. I'm probably one of the few people, despite liking Frank Capra movies and Jimmy Stewart, who's actually never seen it yet. Well, I guess I've seen it as a kid, but I haven't seen it recently that I can remember. For example, you play the role of Potter.
That's right.
Who's he?
Oh, Potter is, he's flat out the bad guy in the piece. He's the, he represents sort of the dark consumerist, capitalist kind of rapacious capitalist in town who wants to own everything, control everything, and to just make himself as rich as possible at the expense of his fellow citizens. So he's just kind of an unbridled, greedy banker, businessman type. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so this production, is it a musical?
It has Peter Jorgensen and Nico Rhodes have done this fantastic adaptation where they take bits of the stories and they add songs from the period. So we've got some Gershwin tunes, some Kurt Weill, some Ivor Novello, as well as some traditional Christmas music. So.
And it just seems like a great piece for this time of year. Well, I guess that's why people like the movie a lot.
Yeah.
But on stage, I mean, it's a different experience altogether. So even if you say are familiar with the film, it's still something unique to see on the stage, as people will shortly at the Gateway, right?
Oh, sure. For sure, the musical elements add to it to hear some of these great songs in service of a great story. So. And we have a 10-piece orchestra, so it's kind of great. You get that sense of being at a musical, but it's a story that is so well known and so well loved because of its very timely messages of what actually is valuable in life, the friendships that we make and sustain. Those are the things that actually enrich us in life.
And it's the sort of story, I guess, that's needed today now more than ever, if you will.
Absolutely, it's such a timely, it's such a timely message.
Yeah. So Nick Fontaine, he plays George Bailey. It's a role that's identified with one actor in particular. But when they do stage "It's a Wonderful Life," as they have in numerous times now over the years in this part of the world, at least, from reviews that I've seen of it of these productions, people quickly forget Stewart, don't they?
Yeah, and that's no easy trick because he it's such an iconic role for him, but absolutely Nick has made this his own. He's really wonderful as George. He infuses it with so much decency and kindness and the pain of what it's like to see all your dreams kind of fall to the wayside because you're always helping other people. I mean, Nick just encapsulates that great everyman story of a really selfless, generous guy.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, your director, Peter Jorgensen, I'm wondering, as a cast, does he encourage you all to see the film while you're, say, preparing to play the various parts that you all do play?
Not necessarily. I mean, most of us have seen it. I myself have probably seen it at least 24 times. It's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's in any way. I mean, if anything, he's definitely not looking for some kind of reproduction.
Sure.
Of original concept of characters. And Lionel Barrymore was such a fantastic Mr. Potter. Even if I wanted to try to mimic his performance, it wouldn't come out remotely the same. He's just so different than I am. So,
And that's what makes the story, I guess, so as good as it is. These roles can, even if they're identified with someone in particular, it's robust enough that anybody, you know what I mean, that it can.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially in 2018, it's a very different time than it was once was.
Mm-hmm.
It remains entertaining and relevant to see on the stage, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned yoga play. That's upcoming for you. You'll be acting between now and, say, I guess, when does the run end? I guess it ends at the end of the year, the 31st. Does acting, say, when you have the opportunity to do that, does that inform directing a little bit more?
Not so much, because the style of the piece that I'm going to direct is so vastly different. You know, this is a kind of a classic that people know. That's a period piece from the 40s, and Yoga Play is very sharp-edged satire, very modern day. It's about it's a satire that kind of sends up Lululemon culture and talks about the whole commercialization, commodification of Indian spirituality. So it's so different in its pace and its tone and its feel that I have to kind of compartmentalize and during the day when I'm prepping for rehearsals, which start immediately after we close It's a Wonderful Life, I'm in the world of yoga play, and then at night when I'm Mr. Potter, it's, you know, that's a different compartment, and I've just got to really access a whole really kind of different set of just put my head in a different world altogether.
So physically, I mean, because you are acting on stage every night, mm-hmm. It must be exhausting, but I'm just wondering mentally what that's like for you.
It's burning the candle at both ends to kind of, you know, be in the office during the day and the run and or just prepping for yoga play while uh-huh. acting at night. But, I love it, so it sustains me.
How do you keep nimble, or not nimble, but how do you keep your energy up, say?
I get my sleep for sure. I get my exercise for sure. That's the important thing.
Yeah. The Nine Dragons, you mentioned that a moment ago. That's a play you wrote. What was that about?
Nine Dragons is a detective thriller set in 1920s colonial Hong Kong. It follows the story of a very brilliant and very underestimated, overlooked Chinese detective on the Hong Kong police force who is trying to solve a series of murders. And so on its surface, it's a piece about, you know, who's killing all these women. But I'd say at a deeper level, it's about this detective's search for identity and where he stands as a Chinese man in a very colonial society.
From my understanding, it was a very noir-y feel to it. Is that
That's
right?
To a certain extent, it definitely, I think, was inspired by some favorite writers of mine, like Chandler and Hammett. So.
Yeah, when you I'm assuming you grew up reading them. When you're writing your own play, did some of the habits that they had as writers, I mean, does that creep into your creative process?
You mean the habits and the way they wrote, or the habits of how it appears on the page?
How they wrote, I'm assuming.
Oh, you know, honestly, I love reading this stuff, but I don't know what they did to write. Like, I know that...
I'm assuming they drank a lot.
Yeah, was with Lillian Hellman, and they both were serious alcoholics. So, yeah. No, that did not creep into my process. I think I wrote the whole thing pretty well sober. So.
Well, that's good, yeah. It's good that years later, I think writers are smart enough to know.
Yeah.
And that to emulate some of your favorites may not necessarily be a good thing.
Yeah.
What's the play where you had to, I don't know if you wrote it, but you acted in it, where you had to make the milkfish?
I wrote that and I acted in it. Yeah, that was a piece called A Taste of Empire that I first performed in 2010. And it's more of a kind of site-specific performance piece where... I cook a real Filipino dish, uh-huh. fish dish, in real time while there's a kind of comic deconstruction of the dish. And the conceit is that you're about to see a famous chef give a demonstration, and he's kind of a Gordon Ramsay-like enfant terrible of the culinary world. But it turns out that he's called away on a culinary emergency, so you see his sous chef, which is me,
yeah.
Hapless, naive sous chef, did give the demonstration. And this chef, Maximo Cortez, his whole philosophy of cooking is sort of it's called imperial cuisine, and it's the opposite of ethical, sustainable eating, where you're trying to just carve out the biggest footprint possible in all your food choices. So that's where the comedy lies, is trying to really talk with pride about this horrifically unethical kind of, yeah, way of consuming. And then at the end, when I make this dish, the audience gets to try it. And that's part of the fun of it, is that you're there, you can see it being prepared, you can smell all the, you know, the scents, and you get to try it in the end. And then my good friend Derek Chan translated it into uh-huh. Cantonese. And he has now been performing it in Cantonese. I directed him in my track, so he's the only other guy who's ever performed the show. And he recently went to Toronto, and he and his partner, Pedro Shamali, I think were nominated for a Dora Award there in Toronto, so that was quite thrilling. And now I have another friend who actually might translate it into Tagalog.
I see. Did the Toronto production, did they make Bungos as well?
Oh, yeah, it's always the same dish.
Oh, it always is.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of, it's part and parcel of the show. You can't really mess around with that without rewriting the whole thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. My parents are Filipino, and I still cannot, at 36. I mean, you as you get older, I guess, you appreciate some of these foods that you grew up with that you didn't like, but I still can't eat that fish.
Oh, really? Nong bangus? You don't like? Oh,
no.
You know what? Honestly, my recipe is actually quite. I think I might be able to convert you on that. I really do. I'm not just. Yeah, I think if you tried the version that we make in the show, you might have second thoughts.
Really?
Yeah, because it's not as kind of brown, rubbery on the outside as your kind of. Yeah, it's a bit more tasty.
Yeah, and it has for people listening, it has a smell that's very different than say fish that we're used to, say in this part of the world.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess, and the bones as well. But I mean, the recipe that you make, I guess, removes the bones, right?
Yeah, well, pretty well every time. Yeah. Like you make the stuffed version, you have to take the bones out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like just like you know, iha, where you just throw it on a grill and
squeeze
some calamansi on it.
Yeah. How have you found it in terms of the work that you do, especially when you're writing plays, to reflect your own heritage, your own roots? I mean, is that something that you've wanted to do throughout your career?
I would say it's more that when I write, I get more in touch with who I am. Like, I think, you know, probably as Canadian, I call you, can appreciate this, but for those of us who kind of are children of immigrants or grew up in a different culture, we kind of live between worlds. So
yeah.
I would honestly say in when I first started in my 20s, if I were to write a play, it would never occur to me to explore my Chinese identity or my Filipino identity, as a Chinoy. Because I was so, I'm a bit older than you. I grew up in a time where I was in a minority and I assimilated and I just thought of myself as white as the next guy. So in a way, my writing has been a way to ask who is it I am because, I'm neither this nor that. You know, I mean, I grew up, as I said, thinking of myself as really assimilated. But then when I went to the theater world, it was quite shocking because all I was told was, you're different, you're not one of us, you don't belong. And that was, a real awakening. So I think my writing reflects my ongoing search for a place of belonging. So Nine Dragons was that to a certain, I have no family connection to Hong Kong, but I know what it's like to be a Chinese person in a very white world. That's what the play's about. It's set in this specific place and time, and it's set as a detective story, but it could just as easily be about my own experience as an actor emerging in the early 90s in a place that was overwhelmingly white. The piece that I'm writing now is also it's about trying to find that common ground between Chinese and non-Chinese. So I would say, yeah, it's not so much that I was yearning to write this to express it, it's more of my way of processing the world through my writing, I guess.
And when you do that, does it make for a better life? I mean, as you get older, I mean, do you find that you understand your roots better, if you will?
Yeah, I do. The research that I've done and just being like I can honestly say I'm pretty comfortable with where I am. Like, I mean, it sounds like I'm somebody who's just like neurotically struggling for some kind of, and it's really, it's not that. Like, I'm pretty comfortable with who I am and where I am, but I still know, I still know what it's like to receive a lot of unwanted microaggressions. I still know what it's like to just navigate a world where the power structures are kind of slanted against you, So, that's what I talk about these days, and that's what I hope other people who are, maybe share similar experiences to me can identify with, and it resonates with them. But at the same time, I'm writing for a large audience. Like, I mean, the thing that I found most gratifying about Nine Dragons was the people who got that it was an allegory for racism and discrimination and modern world, they could enjoy it on that level. And the people who just wanted to enjoy a good murder mystery thriller could enjoy it on that level. And I would say, you know, same with Taste of Empire. There were people who really got all of its themes about imperialism and colonialism. And there were people who just wanted to see a fish getting cooked and wanted to munch on some fish at the end. And that's fine. There's something for everyone. So that's, I think that's what I try to do in my work, is write it specifically for one audience, but not to the exclusion of all other people.
And to think a generation or two from now, just what you'll change in terms of say, the conversation, or how a kid that, say, looks like you will find themselves in the world that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And just how helpful that might be to them.
Well, I hope, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What? So you mentioned that you're leaving this job in February.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do after that?
Well, as soon as Yoga Play is up, I start rehearsals for a play I'm directing for the Arts Club on the Stanley stage called The Orchard after Chekhov, a wonderful new play by Toronto writer Serena Parmar. It's an adaptation of The Cherry Orchard set uh-huh. in the Okanagan in the 70s with a Punjabi Sikh family of farmers. And then after The Orchard is up, I start rehearsals for another play at the Arts Club that I'm going to do as an actor called The Great Leap by Lauren Yee, who wrote the piece King of the Yees that we premiered a couple of seasons ago. So the Arts Club is doing her newest, well, actually, it's not her newest play, it's her like next to newest play called The Great Leap, which is a wonderful piece about basketball exchange that takes place in the 70s, and then like a friendly international basketball tournament.
What have these last 6 years meant for you as artistic director of Gateway Theater?
I've learned a lot about what it means to run a company and to be part of a community. I didn't know anybody in the Lower Mainland when I came here, and I found community and friends, and it's been quite wonderful. So I've learned, I think I've grown as an artist, and I've just made a whole bunch of wonderful new connections.
And to your credit, and not only yours, but the people with you there at Gateway, the company has grown a great deal in the 6 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's great to go to places like Ottawa or Calgary, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Toronto, and people are aware of what we're doing. They're interested, and they're inspired by the work we're doing. So that means a lot.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to talk to you today. When they said, when Marnie asked if I would have someone on regarding It's a Wonderful Life, you were the guy that I wanted to talk to. Because I've admired your work from a distance for a number of years now. So I appreciate your time today. Thanks for this. And as you play Potter in this show, I guess break a leg.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Visit gatewaytheater.com for tickets. Gateway Theater's It's a Wonderful Life runs from the 6th to the 31st of December. Giovanni C., the artistic director of the Gateway Theater, joined me on the line from Richmond in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.